Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph for Saturday, December 19th, Sunday, December 20th, and Monday, December 21st. We'll begin with the front page of the newspaper for Saturday about Jessica McKnight. The headline is Roll Out Front. Virus defines McKnight's first year at Health Department. Jessica McKnight had no idea what she was getting herself into when she accepted the position as the administrator of the McLean County Health Department a year ago. It was mid-December and Central Illinois residents were looking forward to the holidays and a new year with new opportunities. McKnight, then the director of the St. Francis County Health Center in Farmington, Missouri, the county's health department, was keeping an eye on reports of this new virus that was spreading in China. In fact, as the offer with McLean County was being finalized, McKnight was working on a presentation on pandemics. By the time McKnight arrived at her new job on January 27th, the virus was getting closer. 6 weeks later, McLean County had its first case, and McKnight was already running at full speed. I was thrust out into the front right away, but I got to know members of the community quicker, and vice versa, she said. Board of Health President Carla Pohl pointed to McKnight's leadership during the crisis. She's maintained the rational voice of science and empathy, providing accurate guidance to the citizens of McLean County on how to stay safe. This has been especially difficult given the politicization of this public health emergency and mixed messages coming from the federal government, she said. As intense interest has focused on the pandemic, COVID has raised the public profile of health officials around the country. Press conferences and media interviews have made figures like the federal infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci and Illinois Department of Public Health Dr. Ngozi Ezike recognizable. McKnight went to Southern Illinois University Carbondale and received a bachelor's degree in public relations, marketing, and journalism. After college, she worked for the Southern Illinois Healthcare Foundation, the federally qualified health center headquartered in Sauget. She was responsible for patient registration and billing and became administrative supervisor. I wore a lot of hats, she said. I worked in hiring, disciplinary, managing schedules, coordinating the staff and customer service and billing issues. After 5 years, she moved to Farmington, where she was assistant director for 2.5 years, and then the director for 3 years, mostly focusing on the opioid crisis. When the McLean County position opened, McKnight felt she was up to the challenge. There isn't anything else I would rather be doing, she said. I do enjoy a challenge, and I do enjoy that every day is something different. Public health is a field where you really get to know your community and make a difference in your community. Going through this has shown me that if I can do this, I can do anything. Public health really is where I want to be. When McKnight was hired, the health department had 83 employees and an $8.4 million budget. Since then, the department has hired nearly 50 contact tracers. Financial support came through a number of state and federal grants. McKnight credits her staff with helping her through the past year. Our staff has been very dedicated, and they left it all out on the field, she said. But there were some tough moments along the way. As of Tuesday, 69 McLean County residents had died, and more than 10,000 residents were diagnosed with the novel virus since March 18th. One former employee, Dion McNeil, who served as a spokesman for the county, filed a lawsuit naming the county board, the health department, and McKnight, alleging racism. The lawsuit is still pending. I feel like I'm a pretty easygoing person, and public health is always changing and shifting, and it always has, probably not to this extent, she said. I won't lie to you and say it's been easy. There have been definitely some overwhelming moments. There are times when you have to shut the door and have a moment to yourself. Have a little bit of a cry, but those pitfalls are what the public health is all about. There is still plenty of work to be done. McKnight says, she is encouraged that the vaccine has arrived, but acknowledges that most McLean County residents are still months away from being able to receive it. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel, she said, and she's looking forward to being able to run the health department without the constant daily updates on caseloads and fatalities. A day off would be nice, she said. I don't think it's been possible to step away completely. I was scheduled off for a day around Thanksgiving, and then another one earlier in the fall, and both times I've gotten away some, but the pandemic doesn't stop just because you're not in the office. I know it's been like that for many people this year, and there's an inability to try and turn it off. I try to give myself a little bit of time on the weekends where I don't read about COVID or think about COVID, but that's not very often. And from page A6 of Saturday's paper, McLean County receives unexpected batch of vaccine. Frontline healthcare workers in McLean County received their first dose of COVID-19 vaccine on Friday, McLean County Health Department officials announced. We are excited to be receiving some of McLean County's first supply of COVID-19 vaccines, said Colleen Canaday, president of Carl Broman Medical Center in Normal. This arrival marks a very important step in the fight against COVID and moving toward a healthier future. While we are still in the tunnel, we can certainly begin to see the light at the end. The health department has been anticipating the arrival of vaccine and planning with Broman and OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington for the first shipments for several weeks. Today is an historic moment in public health to be celebrated, said Jessica McKnight, administrator of the health department. We were not initially expected to get vaccine with the first shipment, but we also know that where we are located geographically, our hospitals provide care for several of the counties that were on the list. McLean County was not on the first round list of 50 counties in the state with the highest death rates per capita, but local public health officials accepted when offered a small allotment of the unused doses from a surrounding county. It has been 9 months since McLean County reported its first confirmed case of COVID-19. Since then, the county has recorded 10,538 cases, including 85 deaths. This is a big day for McLean County, said Lynn Fulton, president OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center. Our frontline caregivers have faced this pandemic head-on while fearlessly providing comprehensive, compassionate care. Today, I was honored to witness some of these heroes take an historic step toward the end of COVID-19. A vaccine is our best shot to eradicate the virus, and we are so proud to be able to offer its protection to our eligible caregivers. McKnight said, the health department is expecting regular shipments of vaccine going forward, but that the amount of vaccine is limited and it could take months before it is widely available. We've been talking about a vaccine and anxiously waiting for it for what feels like so long, McKnight said. It's here, but it doesn't mean that the fight is over. We are one step closer to the finish line. It will be important that we all continue wearing our face coverings, watching our distance, and washing our hands to protect our loved ones and our community until the vaccine becomes more widely available and administered to the general public. And also from page one of Saturday's paper, the headline reads, Town May Waive Liquor License Fees for Next Year. The town council members for Normal on Monday are expected to consider waiving liquor license renewals for bars and restaurants that follow COVID restriction rules. The move comes as municipalities determine how to enforce limits put in place to contain the infection. Under the plan, operators of brew pubs, hotels, tap rooms and stadiums, movie theaters, and others wouldn't have to pay fees as long as COVID rules aren't broken either now or when the state restrictions are loosened. They would have to pay back the amount if a rule is found to have been violated. License fees would also be waived for businesses with liquor licenses for other beer only on-premises consumption. All liquor on-premise consumption, outdoor premises for existing on-premises licenses, limited hours on-premises and consumption, and colleges or universities. Governor J.B. Pritzker last month issued an executive order that banned indoor dining and put other measures in place to drive down coronavirus case numbers. Those rules will be changed once the cases decline. Under the normal plan, businesses receiving the fee waiver can't be found in violation of COVID-19 regulations in any state or local administrative hearing or proceeding after the 2021 license is issued. Town staff drafted the ordinance following a discussion during a December 7th council work session centered on boosting compliance with state rules. Council members expressed interest in drafting an ordinance incentivizing businesses to comply with statewide Restore Illinois restrictions. Council members also discussed potential penalties for businesses not following the orders. The ordinance would apply to 55 establishments and result in an estimated $95,400 in reduced revenue for the fiscal year 2020-2021 general fund. License renewals are paid in February and March. Normal City Manager Pam Reese said the town is still considering an ordinance that would enforce the state-issued mandates. "We haven't totally shut the door on a potential ordinance. We're just getting a little bit more time," said Reese, who added that the majority of businesses in town are complying with Restore Illinois. Pritzker has consistently called on local officials to enforce state COVID rules and said he has not ruled out another stay-at-home order. "If local leaders don't step up, if high-risk industries don't act accordingly, and if people don't wear a mask, we're heading down a very dark path toward where we were last spring," he said during a press conference last month. Last week, Bloomington officials announced a plan to send money collected from COVID violations to District 87 to help those in need over the holidays. From the local and regional section of Saturday's paper, the headline reads, "Another wind farm in works. Texas developer looking at county's Wilson Township." Another wind farm is looking at DeWitt County as a potential landing spot for a project. Letters to landowners in Wilson Township in the northern part of the county were sent in October by a land agent representing Eagle North America, a Houston, Texas renewable energy company specializing in developing wind projects. Engie is interested in developing the Bluebird Wind Project in DeWitt County because of the excellent wind resources and existing electrical transmission infrastructure in the area, writes Cheryl's son. "We believe that the land you own in our proposed project area has good characteristics for development." Messages left for Sun and for the press office at Engie North America were not returned. In July, the county approved its first ever wind farm, the Alta Farms 2 project in Barnett, Wapella, and Clintonia townships. The board voted 6-5 in favor of the projects, but three members who voted for the project were voted out of office in November. A fourth member who did not vote because of a conflict of interest was defeated in the spring primary. DeWitt County Board Chairman Terry Ferguson said he saw a social media post about the company contacting prospective landowners, but doesn't know much else. "They haven't contacted us as far as I know," he said. Zoning Administrator Aaron Pack also has not been contacted. "We've not had any formal contact with anybody representing that company," he told the Pantograph. Construction on the Alta Farms 2 project is slated to begin in 2021, but two lawsuits have been filed in DeWitt County to stall the project. Engle Energy, formerly Tradewind Energy, has filed a motion to dismiss both lawsuits. The motion on the lawsuit filed by the Village of Wapella will be heard on February 24th in DeWitt County. A hearing date on the other lawsuit, filed by opponents of the wind farm, has not yet been set. And also from Saturday's paper, headline reads, Blood Drive Surges Past Goal. The spirit of giving was evident at Grossinger Mortars Arena Friday as people rolled up their sleeves to donate at the American Red Cross Blood Drive, sponsored by the Pantograph. The drive had a goal of 75 units, but Steve Stower, director of blood services for the American Red Cross, said he expected to blow that out of the water and finish with about 90 blood donations. Among those donating was Jackie Birkelbaugh of Bloomington, whose husband donated earlier in the day. She said, "We try to help when we can." Lynn Hruxtra, executive director of the American Red Cross serving Central Illinois, said, "Overall, it's really been a roller coaster since the pandemic started. There was concern at the outset of the pandemic as many businesses shut down and blood drives were canceled," she said. "But a lot of new partners stepped up and opened their doors, providing big open spaces to follow pandemic safety protocols. They aren't the only ones who stepped up. The number of first-time donors we're seeing is a big surprise," said Hruska. Stower said, "The one thing I'm seeing at these drives is a spirit of giving." In scheduling drives, Hruska said, "We watch daily what hospital needs are. The next blood drive is scheduled for 11 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. December 30th at the Holiday Inn & Suites, 3202 East Empire Street in Bloomington. Blood donation can also be given at the Red Cross Blood Donation Center, 1 Westport Court in Bloomington. See the website, redcrossblood.org, or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to make an appointment or to get more information. From Sunday's paper in the local section, our headline reads, Wreaths Laid to Honor Vets Buried at Evergreen. About 150 attend event, nearly 800 graves decorated. For 10-year-old Simon Hamaker, attending the Wreaths Across America event Saturday at Evergreen Cemetery in Bloomington was a learning experience. "I learned how to find the graves of the veterans," he said. "You look for keywords such as their rank or the term served. Then you thank them for their service." Simon, a Boy Scout from Troop 20 in Normal, was one of about 150 people at the ceremony where the graves of veterans were decorated with wreaths. With the help of the community and social media and word of mouth, just about every recorded veteran in our cemetery will have a wreath this year, said cemetery manager Misty Porter. "That is the first time we can say that. There are 794 veterans buried at the cemetery. This really means a lot to me," said Ted Moore of Bloomington. "My stepfather and brother are buried out there, and it is one thing for me to put something on their graves, but it means so much more when he and the others are being honored by so many who appreciated their service." Evergreen Cemetery was one of 2,557 cemeteries to participate in National Wreaths Across America Day. The Wreaths Across America Mobile Education Exhibit visited the cemetery in August. More than 1.7 million wreaths were placed on headstones across the nation. "We say their name out loud and thank them for their service," said Kevin Cook, Scoutmaster for Boy Scout Troop 20 in Normal. "It's an honor to bring our scouts and have them participate in such a meaningful event." Several Cub Scout and Boy Scout troops from the Twin Cities participated. "I really think that is special," said Francis Newburn of Bloomington. "My grandson was excited to participate, and we talked a lot about his grandfather who is buried here today. Each live balsam veteran's wreath is a gift of respect and appreciation donated by a private citizen or organization, and it is placed on graves by volunteers as a small gesture of gratitude for the freedoms Americans enjoy," said Karen Wooster, Executive Director of Wreaths Across America. "For centuries, fresh evergreens have been used as a symbol of honor and have served as a living tribute, renewed annually. Wreaths Across America believes the tradition represents a living memorial that honors veterans, active duty military, and their families. And when volunteers say the name of a veteran out loud when placing a wreath, it ensures they live on in our memory. We are here not to honor their death, but their lives, Porter said. And from page A4 of Sunday's paper, pandemic hits Tazewell County charity fundraising. With the winter holiday approaching, charities and nonprofit organizations throughout the United States traditionally amplify their year-round calls to remember the less fortunate. During the 2020 holidays season, however, the COVID-19 pandemic has swelled the ranks of the less fortunate, while rendering the organizations whose mission it is to help them less fortunate themselves. Tazewell County not-for-profit organizations like We Care of Morton and the Tazewell County Child Advocacy Center, or the CAC, in Pekin, depend heavily each year on in-person fundraising events, like golf outings and trivia nights. But physical distancing protocols during the pandemic have forced organizations throughout central Illinois to cancel in-person events, which had led to a significant drop in community donations. Mike Hutchinson, executive director of We Care Morton, estimated that the group's annual golf outing in June at the Pekin Country Club raises about $22,000. About half of that would go to the cost of putting on the program, Hutchinson explained. The other half would be something we could use for We Care. Unfortunately, this year's cancellation means we lost somewhere in the neighborhood of $12,000. The Tazewell County CAC largest fundraising event of the year is the organization's trivia night in April. According to CAC Director Sarah Ruthel, W-R-H-E-L, the event typically raises about $20,000, with this year's trivia night canceled due to COVID and the fate of next year's event uncertain. CAC is looking to plan a virtual fundraiser for next spring. We're still trying to work through what and when, she said. Funding through community donations as well as state and federal grants, CAC works with police departments and the Illinois Department of Child and Family Services to provide forensic interviews and crisis counseling to child abuse victims. A drop in community donations this year due to the pandemic could force the facility to cut its crisis counseling program, according to Ruthel. And from Sunday's page C1, a related headline, Charitable Giving and Philanthropy Critical This Year. Looking around the community, it is not hard to find individuals and companies who have suffered due to the coronavirus. Many of these folks are finding they cannot pay their bills, their mortgages, or provide for their families. Fortunately, not all businesses have been negatively affected. That is why this year it is incumbent for those companies to help out in any manner they can to keep our community strong. One of the cornerstones of successful companies is their philanthropic outreach, giving some back to the community when they need it. The most makes an organization stronger in the eyes of their peers. More importantly, these charitable acts of kindness can spread very quickly. A simple act of caring has a ripple effect. There are numerous ways to maintain a charitable mission, whether you're trying to raise money for a good cause or support local businesses. No act of kindness is too small. Here are a few ways you can build a philanthropy into your business that will make a difference. Be generous, and others will be generous too. Let's be honest. You can't expect others to be generous and invest in your cause if you do not invest yourself. Companies that want to be involved need to be transparent so people can see exactly what they're donating and the steps they've taken to get there. It's not enough to just have a plan to help. You need to take the lead in contributions. Building exciting projects that people can get involved in. Get creative and start something applicable to your business that will gain traction. Be inclusive and get buy-in from all areas. Get them invested in your mission. Involve the team members and family members of your staff to be active parts of the process. It's something they can all be proud of. Don't be afraid to spread the word. A cynic might presume that the only reason to raise awareness of your philanthropic mission is for some good publicity. While this is undeniably a benefit, it should come more as a side effect. If you're serious about your charitable mission, the most beneficial thing you can do to get people involved, raise more money, and spread kindness is to shout about it. All things considered, being in a position to give back is very rewarding. So if you're looking to build some charitable projects into your business, congratulations to you. You'll not regret it. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from John Rudy, financial advisor with Savant Capital Management in Bloomington. And finally, from Sunday's page A2, film on missing U of I scholar shown. A documentary about a University of Illinois scholar from China who was abducted and killed 2 years ago is now playing in virtual theaters. Director Jianyan or Jenny Shi said she wanted to turn the attention to Yinying Zhang and her family, given that much of the news coverage was about her disappearance, the investigation, her killer, and the trial. From our perspective, we felt like Yinying's story and her family's stories were really lost, she told the Champaign-Urbana News-Gazette. She was a Northwestern University journalism graduate student when Zhang went missing in June 2017. For the documentary, she traveled to Zhang's home in China, capturing her parents fighting and stressed over their daughter's search, internet rumors, and delays in the trial. Though she did not want to be in the film after receiving criticism from some filmmakers that the movie could be seen as exploiting the family, she decided to become part of the documentary and explain her connection to Zhang and her family. I'm hoping even for those in Champaign-Urbana who already know a lot about the story, that they can find something new in this documentary, she said. The film has been played this year virtually at the Chicago International Film Festival and Doc NYC, among several others. It will also be played in China, where Zhang's disappearance received even more attention than it did in the United States. And from Crime Stoppers, police seek armed car theft suspect. A Gridley man is wanted by local authorities who say he is armed and dangerous. Todd A. Kelly, 36, is wanted on a McLean County arrest warrant for possession of a stolen vehicle in connection to multiple stolen vehicles in the area. Kelly is described as a white man who is 5'9" tall and weighs about 190 pounds. He has blue eyes and very short buzz black hair, or brown hair, that is. Leroy police said Kelly checked into the Holiday Inn in Leroy on Thursday night, and he is suspected of stealing a vehicle from there. Bloomington police say he knows he is wanted and has been traveling around several central Illinois counties in an attempt to evade law enforcement. The McLean County Sheriff's Department said Kelly is known to frequent Bloomington Normal Leroy Downs and El Paso areas. Kelly has made threats of violence related to his potential capture and should not be approached, police said. This has been Rita Schulte with the first half hour of excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, December 19th, Sunday, December 20th, and Monday, December 21st. Please stay tuned for the second half, which will be read by Les Schulte in just a few moments.